Valley with Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally. It is good to be back. Where are we now? Episode 4, Season 6, that sounds about right. We're still speaking with passion, we're still speaking with a serious lack of knowledge, but what we have got is sirens. We will hear sirens throughout this podcast, I'm pretty sure of it. The reason why is because we have Jack Bennion there on my left. Say hello, Jack Bennion.
Hello, Tony Simpson.
And where are you, Jack Bennion?
I'm on the park bench in Twickenham.
There you go. See, it's rock and roll, isn't it, in the world of high-level journalism.
Commitment, that is. Commitment. I'm freezing to death here to give you an Absolute Rally podcast.
Wow. Wow. And Ryan Champion will be, of course, will be back. I'm assuming you're back, right?
I am back. I'm at home. I'm at my desk, and I think my heart just bled slightly there for Jack Bennion.
Oh, did it? Did it?
No. Oh,
okay. No. No, that's all. Let's not be silly. Anyway, boys, we know it's Rally Australia this week. We're going to talk about that in due course. We've got Brendan Rees coming up a little bit later on, of course, friend of the show. We know he listens. We know he downloads, but he's just finished a recce for it. I thought it'd be really good to get him on. He's going to be telling us all about the stages. So we'll talk a little bit about that. Jack, we're going to come to headlines. We're on page 14 for our first headline this week. And I think that kind of tells us that the debate is still going on. The story's still going on, but the chase is on for VW Starmen.
Yeah, it's a continuation of last week, isn't it? And it feels like we've been talking about this for months, isn't it? This I think it's coming up to about 3 weeks now, isn't it? But yeah, all the drivers trying to secure places, as you know. Just a bit of an update as to where some of the drivers could be going, and also the fact that no decisions will be sort of made before Australia, which is this weekend. So don't expect anything towards the end of the week. But stuff is starting to bleed out, isn't it, slowly, and starting to hear a bit more about what OJ's doing. And but it's been a bit quiet on the lap of the Mickelson front, so it'd be interesting to see what sort of comes out of that after Australia.
Well, there was a little bit of a rumour, wasn't it, Jack? And I'll come to you in a sec on this one, right? There was a little bit of a rumour that there was going to be an announcement made on Monday or Tuesday. I must admit, I raised an eyebrow when I seen that. I don't know where that one came from. Did you hear that one?
Yeah, it's from M Sport, you're talking about?
Yes, from M Sport and with regards to OG.
Yeah, I had heard some rumours that there was going to be an announcement, but when teams say they're going to make an announcement, you know, that could be them switching suspension suppliers from Bilstein to Öland, couldn't it? You know, you never know what you're going to get, so you always take them with a pinch of salt. And I think it was always pretty certain that we weren't going to get any OJ news before Australia, because that's when, you know, after Australia, there'll be a lot of the decisions made. So, yeah, wasn't really expecting anything major to come out of that.
No, me neither. I'm impressed, by the way, by the analogy that you use regarding technical information on a rally car. There. I don't know about you, Ray. Were you impressed with that?
Well, I would have been, but unfortunately, you used Bilstein's.
Yeah,
I don't think M-Sport's been on Bilstein's
I don't think anyone's been on Bilstein's since the Arc.
Other than that, it was a great analogy.
I think Noah ran them on the Arc, I think, on the first RAC rally. I think other than that, I think we've all been pretty much pro flex Ryger, that type of thing. But there you go. Jack, you've got a lovely picture with Chris Meek. Of course, there was lots of images and there was lots of video footage and stuff of Chris testing in test 9 with that lovely livery that looks like it's what people put in the bottom of drawers, which obviously we spoke about the camouflage one, but a lot of people out watching that. Obviously everyone was quite comfortable with the fact that the people were allowed to watch the test.
Yeah, I think they're getting to a point now where they're almost ready to homologate the car, aren't they? So maybe they're just lightening up a little bit on who's allowed to see the car because it's so close to homologation. But yeah, I don't know, maybe that draw sort of paper that you're talking about has done enough of a job to distract people from what's going on with that maybe aero there. I don't know.
Have you heard anything, Jackie? You've just reminded me of something there. Have you heard anything with regards to Volkswagen still homologating their 2017 car?
No, I haven't actually.
Yeah, it's another one that seems to be rattling about, right, isn't it? You know, there's still talks, rumours, whatever. You know, this is the you know, I guess this is where we've almost got too much information in this day and age. We once complained of not maybe having enough. And these days it seems like we've just got saturation point where it's almost like everybody's kind of taking a punt at this stuff. But, right, have you picked up anything, you know, with regards to the car still being homologated?
Well, I read that rumour online that I think you're referring to. I think it might have been today or last night even, that you know, Volkswagen may be open to running the 2016 cars for customers, and that they'll go as far as they can with the homologation process for the 2017 car, but they can't fully homologate it because they're not going to run it as a team. And let's not forget, these homologation rules are a little bit more complicated than just filing the paperwork. If you remember going back to ProDrive days with the Mini, a team, in order to fulfill the homologation for the car, has to run the car for the full year. So so ProDrive back then did selected rallies in the first year, but the homologation can only be ratified if the team does the full program the second year. And that's why when ProDrive ran out of budget, we saw the Mini Italia team doing all the rounds, because they had a budget to do it, and therefore they saw through the homologation process with the Mini. If the Mini hadn't done every rally, it wouldn't have been homologated. And the same, as far as I know, goes for the 2017 Polo. If it doesn't do all the rallies, it can't be homologated. But it did say in this statement that, like you said, it's come from a source at Volkswagen, that they will go as far as they can in the homologation process. What does that mean? Why? I don't really know.
No. And it's not an easy process, the FIA homologation. You know, I know from speaking to various people at various teams over the years that I've worked with as well, and some of the things that you can be knocked back on, and it can be down to typeface and things like, it's just, you know, ridiculous, some of the things that can come out. But anyway, I'm not going to get too bogged down in that, but still, there you go. Jack, I wanted to mention this one. I think we were all happy to read a headline. This, I know it was already out around various social medias. If you could just tell that bird to wind its neck in, Jack, in the background, that'd be great. He seems to have quite a lot to say for himself on this podcast.
I feel like the pigeon lady.
I feel like you kind of, we're doing a nature podcast, to be honest with you. I'm almost expecting a kind of a David Attenborough-esque description of what's going on behind you.
There's no iguanas being chased by snakes in my park in Twickenham.
Is that hope? That's not some kind of euphemism you're using there, Jack.
I don't know. That's the programme that's on Sunday night, isn't it?
Okay.
David
Yeah. Okay. And there it is again. If it's not a siren, it's a squiddle. WRC bosses overjoyed with viewing figures on Wales Rally GB. I've got a confession to make on this one. I didn't see any of the coverage on Channel 5. Because it was the Sunday where the clocks changed, and I completely and utterly missed it. Shame on me. There you go. I know, but obviously you wouldn't have seen it because you were down there on the Sunday. I got it on the wonderful WRC Plus app. Right, you tuned in. Was it basically, you know, just the Channel 5 feed that was just kind of taking Julian and John Derensborough?
Well, of course, they did the live coverage. So yeah. I tuned into the live coverage on the last stage, which was tailored. They had Nicky Grist as a guest presenter there, did a little bit of an intro and a wrap-up afterwards, and I actually enjoyed it. I thought it was, you know, it was good live coverage. There was good action, a good stage for TV as well. You know, obviously chosen for that reason alongside the lake. And I thought the programme worked well. So great to see live TV back on a mainstream channel.
Now, this is going to be a challenge for anybody with regards to TV, live TV or anything else. I'm going to come to you first, Jack. Safari Rally wants to return to the WRC slot.
It's good job you came to me first, because I think there'll be a certain other man on this podcast who's itching to have a good
No, no, well, to be fair, mate, I'm expecting not a lot from you and loads from Rye, so I kind of worked
exactly. That's what I was referring to, yeah. Yeah, so yeah. Basically, it's planned for Safari Rally to return, hopefully by 2019. It's been undertaken by the Kenya Motorsport Federation, and the president of Kenya seems to be well behind it, so that's quite good news, and that's always what you need, isn't it? You know, you need the government behind any event that's going to take place, really. So, hopefully, we'll see a candidate event in 2018 and then the full event in 2019.
Right, obviously you've been over there a hell of a lot. You know the format of WRC rallies now and how things have changed and everything else, and we talk about them being more sprint events than endurance events and things like that. How do you see this happening?
It's going to be a challenge. Because for a number of reasons, I think, you know, obviously we've talked about it in previous podcasts. We've had guests on that were part of the Old Safari, and when Safari was last in the WRC, they tried to bring it into a modern format, but it was difficult to fit, you know, in the mould of WRC. And, you know, not that far before the end of Safari, every car had its own helicopter, every car had its own spotter in it, so that they were looking out for wildlife, they were looking out for other road users, because the key thing is Safari was always on open roads. And I guess that'll be the key shift. I would imagine for it to stand any chance of being back in WRC, it will have to be on closed roads. And closed roads in Africa is a very difficult thing to police. Obviously, you've got massive open areas. You would be very difficult to marshal those open areas. So I can only imagine they're looking at private land, at maybe fenced off game parks, that kind of thing, that where there is an element of restriction in terms of movement of vehicles already. So I certainly think it can be done, but I think it will be a huge undertaking by any organising team to run a rally that the WRC will see fit to fit in the championship with modern safety in mind. I think if it could be done, it would be incredible for WRC again. Again, we've talked about this in previous shows. Stories from the Safari are still central to the history of the WRC. If we talk to Colin McMaster, he'd tell us it was one of his favourite rallies to photograph, to run our climb. The iconic images we talked about last week, many of them are from Safari. So as a backdrop for holding a rally, it's second to none. The history of the World Rally Championship in Kenya and Tanzania and Uganda and those other countries it's been to, but in East Africa is also second to none. It would be fabulous to see it back in the championship, but it will be a big challenge to provide secure stages that, you know, the current drivers will want to attack flat out. And again, that'll be interesting to see what sort of stage lengths that might provide. Because, the Safari Classic that we do, the East African Classic Safari, still has the 160-kilometre stages, 100-mile stages, but of course it is technically still on open roads. So to get the secure stages, it'll be interesting to see what sort of format they could come up with.
Absolutely, absolutely. Is that what you meant to say, Jack?
Yeah, that's what he said.
Yeah, okay, I'm with you. Don't worry, mate. I'm completely and utterly with you. Now, we haven't got much of a preview this week, I think it's fair to say, for Rally Australia in MN, Jack. Obviously, we've got Brendo coming up a little bit later on. To me, I'm hopeless with stage names. I know Rye is very, very good with stage names. Coffs Harbour, there's a whole thing now. There's a couple of spectator stages. There's one that's like a rallycross stage. Brenda was talking to me about before and things like that. Rally Australia, does it hold something special for you? Is it one of those rallies? Because I'll be honest with you, it always holds something special for me. Back from the days of playing Colin McRae Rally on the PlayStation 1, it's always had that. It's there in Indonesia were always tough rallies to do.
Yeah, Indonesia was one I remember for the PlayStation, definitely. But for me, it's a difficult one, because I think Australia quite often comes at the expense of New Zealand, which is something I'm not particularly happy about. I'd love to see New Zealand back on the calendar. And I think that's a bit of a difficult one diplomatically, but I think it's a good rally, and I think the stage is a good quality, and there's always action there. It's always exciting. Someone usually has a bit of an off, or something's a bit exciting about it. So it should be good. But I think the major story from Australia has got to be Laffey, hasn't it, in the WRC 2 Championship, because obviously most of the major stuff's shown up in the WRC, and then we've just got the fight for second place between Nerville and Mickelson.
Well, I should, just before we move away from WRC2, obviously we've banged on is not the wrong term really, but obviously Elvin Evans was in with a shout of that. That's all now changed, hasn't it?
Yeah. So basically, it's a two-way fight between Laffey and Sunninen, or Laffey and himself, depending on how you look at it, because Sunninen's not going to Australia. Basically, Laffey needs to finish in the top three in order to take the WRC2 Championship. If he finishes fourth, the title goes to Sunderland. So Evans is out of the equation, unfortunately, now due to what happened on GB. And Laffey's got it all to play for. He's just got to finish third in the rally in order to win.
There you go. Right. I always think of, do you know what? You put the image out and we were talking about iconic images. Obviously, you put that one out to McRae the other day over the Yumpson Rally Australia. I can't remember any of the stage names. I just always remember it being very sandy, very dusty, and very intense. I think it's probably the best way of putting it.
We've seen a change, a big change in the rally, haven't we, since it moved from Perth. You know, it had a really an iconic round, I guess, of the WRC while it was in Perth. The Langley Park Super Special, the name that I remember, was one of the first Super Specials in the championship, and the promotion of the event when it was in Perth was always fantastic, and it was always seen by many of the other rallies as the one to follow in terms of its marketing. And then we saw the loss of the support in Perth, and it eventually found a home in Coffs Harbour, and again seems to be performing quite strongly. But so many strong memories really over the years from Australia. We talked about the Bunnings jumps last week. We talked actually another thing in Bunnings, the year it flooded in Bunnings and all the cars got stuck in the water, including Colin McRae. I think I remember Jimmy McRae in there trying to push Colin's car out of the water. Carlos Sainz with a massive accident in the Celica back in the day. Delacour in a Mitsubishi pulling the engine out of it. And it actually links nicely to my Any Other Business, which I'll come back to in a little while.
I've got a couple of epic ones. Now, it's Wednesday as we record this, which obviously is the day that's released now. JB, you've been tweeting about this. You've been putting stuff out on Twitter, my Facebook, and things like that. You have done your BRC review.
I have. Yeah, it's four pages in MN this week.
It is.
BRC, poorly written review.
I've read every single word repeatedly since I picked this up this morning.
Wow.
No. Because I needed to get my head around a certain paragraph.
Go on, then.
Perhaps the second most populated category was BRC4. The almost certain winner didn't register for the championship, thus handing it to Tony Simpson. Guy Atherton was not registered, but in a quicker R2 car, some would argue he should beat Simpson, but the Liverpool driver still ran. Atherton, close on the events. Liverpool driver still ran Atherton close on events. He spun more outdated essay. So we'll kick a man while he's down.
I've complimented you on the fact that you challenged G on all the events, despite having a much older car, which is heavier, not as powerful, not as modern. I've clearly given you the due there, I think. I think that's fair.
I think you punched me with one hand and then caressed me with the other. How about you, Ryan?
I think you two should carry this on afterwards, because there's some people out there thinking, okay, what are these two on about? BBC4.
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 Find out more.
Is that
ITV4 plus one? It was ITV4 plus
one.
In
an hour.
But all joking aside, folks, genuinely, I think you've done quite a comprehensive review. I think it's fair to say. You gave you your top 10 drivers. We'll have a little bit of a rundown through these. Without doubt, Elvin Evans was first. Frederick Arlen was two. Rob Duggan was three. Matt Edwards was four. Tom Cave was five. Desi Henry was six. Sindre Furustreth was seventh. David Bogie, eighth. And Jamie Anderson, ninth. And Josh Moffat in 10. Just tell us, Jack, in all seriousness, how did you kind of quantify your top 10 drivers in the BRC this year?
It's one of the most difficult things to do as a journalist, to pick a top 10 as a journalist as anything, really. I mean, if we went through the WRC drivers this year and tried to pick a top 10, I'm sure we'd have quite a few arguments along the way, and it'd be very difficult. But I think just running through it quickly, I think Elvin's obviously a top number one, and I think Frederick Arlen ran in closest, so he was a comfortable candidate for number two. Rob Duggan, junior champion, fantastic this year, and probably on stage wins was just as dominant as Elvin Evans in the top category, so I think he deserves to be in the top three. And then moving down, it's much more difficult because there's less sort of stats to quantify it with, really, so it's more just a case of opinion and one driver.
No, sorry, Jack, go on.
No, you're okay, go on.
I was just going to say, I think you nailed it, in all honesty. I really do think you nailed it. And the reason why I say that is that where you put Matt Edwards, who I thought did a cracking job in a Group N car, of course, we've all spoke about the Group N cars at the beginning of the year. I thought it was spot on. Tom Cave, where he was, absolutely, I couldn't agree more. Desi Henry, again, did throw quite a few people, I think, with his pace once he made that full switch to the R5 car. I wouldn't have put it any other way, to be honest with you. Okay. I really wouldn't.
Yeah, the only one I was, quite upset not getting there was Johnny Greer. I was just going to say about that, because he finished third in the championship at the end of the day, and maybe there was a place for him. But I think given the drivers that were in there and looking at all the classes and stuff, it was difficult to try and slot him in, really. And Josh made the top 10 at the bottom just solely because he won one of the events. So, that was a difficult decision. But I enjoyed doing it, actually.
We're not going to do a full kind of unravel of BRC at the moment. I think I'd like to do something towards the end of the year when we've got a bit more time, maybe dedicate a little bit more time on the podcast to kind of doing our season roundup. I think that would be the way to go. But right, from your point of view, we kind of had a vested interest due to the fact, obviously, I was doing it. Jack was writing about it. You were a punter on the sidelines in many ways. How did you see it?
Well, firstly, the British Championship was back again. So, I mean, that's good news all around, isn't it? We've talked about how important it is to British rallying to have a strong championship. If we want to feed drivers to the world championship, then it's vital we have a strong domestic championship. So, firstly, the championship's back. That's something that fundamentally had to happen. Secondly, it was a very strong championship. We could maybe say that we had a dominant winner, but then again, that's not always a bad thing. It gave Elvin a chance to actually drive somewhere, to do some miles and to do some winning, which he clearly did. And if he does put something together for next year, which we hope he will, I'm sure, that'll be time well spent. But we saw a lot of good young drivers in good cars. We saw some good battles throughout the field. And, I just hope it goes from strength to strength. And I guess in some ways, year two will be the big test, because in the first year, people were keen to go back there and to compete. And maintaining that momentum for the second year will be the important thing. So let's hope that we have a strong championship next year and it continues to thrive.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 44 1904 766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is Absolute Rally.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. Listen, I want to crack on with a couple more things, which leads on quite nicely. Now, Pirelli were quite a strong supporter of the British Rally Championship. You just mentioned Johnny Greer. Of course, Johnny was a Pirelli runner as well. I thought it was interesting, right, a man like yourself who's worked quite closely with Pirelli over the years as well. Pirelli have dropped their WRC programme.
I guess at WRC level for them, you've either got to be in it with a full commitment and factory teams, or or maybe pull out as they have. They've been on the fringes of it, and I guess maybe that's their thinking. It'd be a big undertaking for them at the minute to commit to it, to compete against Michelin and DMAC now, particularly with their F1 program. Maybe they just thought it wasn't doing them any favours to be a bit player in the WRC.
Jack, I think we're all appreciative when we have tyre manufacturers that come in. Pirelli are very strong around the world, supporting various national championships and drivers and deals and things like that. Were you shocked by this?
No, mainly for the reasons that Ryan answered there. They weren't a front-running contender. They weren't backed by a manufacturer. Not winning rallies and not really doing anything to further their brand, I imagine, with what they were doing this year. So it's a no-brainer for me. I think you move out and do something different, and they've got some strong commitments in different championships and outside of rallying. So maybe that's the way forward for them for now, until they can sort of redefine what they want to do in rallying.
Absolutely. Now, I want to crack on, boys. Got a couple of little bits of Autosport Proud story this week, Jack. Of course, your sister publication, Skoda, rule out running the Polos. It was never going to happen, was it? It was one of those tittle-tattle stories that was finally kind of put to bed this week.
Yeah, too many of them, I think. It's it's easy when things like this come out that, you know, you might get you get stories from sources and things like this about stuff that's going to happen. Definitely that was one of them that was just seemed bizarre to me. I couldn't believe that people even talking about that, to be honest. But no, it's just one of them rumours that do the rounds when these kind of things come up.
Yeah, there you go. Right, boys, believe it or not, we're always pushed for time. So we're now kind of 25 minutes in and everything else. I've got a couple of bits and pieces I just want to crack on from. We were contacted, as ever. We really do appreciate, by the way, last week, we kind of started this thing with our iconic images on Twitter, and boy, did that one take off. And yeah, lots of retweets and lots of debate and lots of chats between lots of people. And thank you so much all for contributing to that. But we've got a couple of messages as well that have come in via the Facebook page, which I want to contribute, thank people for contributing on that now. Just follow on really from iconic images, but I wanted to help somebody out, as they say. Where are we? Wow, Mike Shaw, now, who is actually on this podcast a bit later on. This is probably one for you, Rye, actually. I'm going to read this one out. A question I tried to get answered a few podcasts back, and maybe it's a good time for the off-season, but what happened to the WRC R GT category? Will it return? Is the Tuthill Porsche still developing their gravel spec 996, or is the project dead?
I think, unfortunately, there was just a lack of demand all around for our GT cars. You know, the hope was it would inspire maybe the gentleman driver, the wealthy amateur, to go and do some WRC rallies, and there just wasn't enough customers out there. The Tuthill RGT, the 911, has been sold to an Italian customer, so it is still an homologated car. The Italian customer could run it if he wanted to, but that car's no longer in the Tuthill fold, and you know, unfortunately, we didn't see it supported from anywhere else. So at this moment in time, it is difficult to see anybody developing an RGT, because the support just doesn't seem to be there for it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Neil, two things I can add to that, Tony. There's the Abarth being developed, the RGT Abarth that we saw come out last year. And the other thing is, you can't really say whether there's going to be a class next year until the World Motorsport Council meets at the next time and confirms the regs for next year. So I think the answer to that is imminent from the last World Motorsport Council meet of the year.
And that's why people listen to this podcast, because they can get informed, knowledgeable answers to questions from my co-hosts and not from me. There you go. I think we just sold that one up. Neil Henderson, thanks, boys. Neil Henderson, asking a small favour of us. Very parochial, this one, but Neil listens to the podcast. He's involved with the Wyadeen Rally. He's doing a book that's basically, he's looking for people who were involved in the rally quite recently. If they could get in contact with us on the Dean's Rallies at btinternet.com, if they want to feature in the Wyadeen Book of 40. Couple of other things, boys. I was going to do it. I've got too many other businesses, and I know that's frowned upon. But I don't want to do one as a feat. I'll tell you what, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to do one of them as in any other business. I'll do this one now. Freddie Loic's retiring, boys.
Yes. he's announced his retirement this week. And what is it, 27 years, am I right in saying, that he's been actively competing? Great career, you know, multiple Belgian champion over recent years, great WRC career as well. And, you know, I guess he's been and done what he wants to do. He wasn't going to be returning to the WRC. He's won everything he can in Belgium over the last few years. And, you know, good for him to be moving on to maybe focus on other things. But, you know, a fantastic record in the sport.
To me, Mr. Super 2000. How about you, Jack?
Yeah, I really enjoyed watching lots through the many stages of his career. And I think people in Britain should be paying quite close attention to this, because this potentially means that he's not going to be at Ypres next year, which is when the British Rally Championship goes over to Ypres. They're not going to have to contend with Freddie Loic, which is something that will make it a bit easier for a PRC driver to win the event, for sure.
But again, you just look through his history and the drives that he's had. Obviously, you know, WRC with Hyundai and Mitsubishi and with Peugeot. Okay, the Peugeot thing didn't quite happen, but, you know, still, we talk about iconic images, right, last week. The iconic images with Freddie after breaking his foot, for me, is another one I'd completely and utterly forgot about, and it's just coming to me.
I remember him being on the Swedish rally when he was driving for Hyundai, and he was on crutches getting around the service area into the car. And we talked in the past about iconic liveries as well, and a lot of those came from the cigarette companies, and obviously Freddie Loitz came from the time when Marlboro was really backing the Belgian drivers. Bruno Thierry benefited from that as well, and that's what saw Freddie jump into the World Championship really initially with Toyota, and then of course with Mitsubishi. So he, you know, had a great career in the four-wheel drive 2-litre WRC cars, moving on to Hyundai before he then ran, as you say, Super 2000 cars and then R5 cars latterly.
It's surprising when you look at it. He drove, you know, Super 1600s, he drove Super 2000 cars, World Rally cars, Group A cars, you know, just a fantastic career.
Yeah, former two cars as well, because he started in the Astra.
Yeah, of course, the Astra, yeah. Just, Freddie, enjoy your retirement. I know you're still going to be in and around stuff, but we doff our caps to you, sir. We doff our caps. Boys, that brings us to our any other business. Mine's going to be quite lame now I've done that one. But I thought it was more of a good discussion point. Jack, have you got your any other business ready?
Yep.
Oh, okay. Would you like to go with your any other business, or are you going to just keep it to yourself?
I can. I've made an effort this week after you all had a go at me last week for making a poor effort at it. So as you were so nasty to me last week, I've decided that I'm going to try and catch you both up now. I've prepared a very short BRC quiz from 2016, and one of you is going to win the absolute Benjamin Award for getting the most answers right.
Right. Okay. Okay, I've been threatening to try and put a quiz together for you two.
But Tony's had the advantage of reading the review.
Oh, well, not all the answers are in the review.
Just half of them.
I'll be honest with you, some of the reviews are factually incorrect.
You should know all this. You should know all this anyway. Ryan, you're an oracle of information.
The review is brilliant until it gets to BBC4 and then it all goes a bit skewed as far as I'm concerned. But still, go on, carry on.
So, first question, Elvin Evans obviously won the most stage wins this year, but how many stage wins did he have?
Oh, I'm going to say...
This isn't a
20.
Review. 20?
I'm not going to cheat. I'm going to say 20.
Ryan, higher or lower for the point?
Higher. I would say it's in the 30s.
You're both wrong, but Ryan, you're the most right, because it was 56, and that's not including any of the bogey times from Carlisle.
So fair play. Fair play.
Second place is Frederick Arlen with 8. So there's a bit of a differential point.
Yeah, absolutely. Next all right. Well off on that one.
There's only one driver this year to win on asphalt apart from Elvin Evans. Who is it?
It's not me. I can hear Ryan typing.
I'll give you a hint, he's Irish.
It's got to be... is he registered in the BRC?
Yeah, this is the only registered BRC competitive
store
tonight in this quiz,
okay.
So it's got to be registered.
Okay, Johnny Greer.
Nope. Ryan?
Okay.
I'm going Alistair Fisher.
No, you're both wrong. Josh Moffat.
Does he? There you go.
Yeah, okay. No, can't remember that one.
Circuit of Ireland winner, Josh Moffat.
Yeah, I thought it was Circuit of Ireland, but I couldn't remember who won it.
That's right. Who was the team champion in the BRC this year?
Ah, I know.
Go on.
Vauxhall?
No. Ryan?
I was going to go, I would have said DMAC, but...
Correct. This is 3-0, Tony. You need to pull some points back here.
I'm all right losing to Ryan on rally quizzes, to be honest with you. But, okay,
There's only two more left. You've lost anyway, but the next two questions are...
Yeah, kick a man while he's down again.
There's only one man to win in BRC 5 this year. Who was it?
Tom Williams.
Yes, correct. Well done, Tony. You pulled a point back.
Good answer. Son off. I'll throw a question in there. Son off.
Come on, son off.
Daddy Williams.
Yes.
And Daddy Williams being? Tony Simpson, you honestly don't know the answer to this one,
David,
do you?
David Williams.
Yes, thank you. Who was
the manager of Richard Burns.
Yes, well done. Correct. Well done.
Who could have been your manager at one point? There you go. Do we get an extra point for this? that deserves an extra point as far as I'm concerned.
We'll give you an extra point now, and that makes the last question a showdown, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah, let's do that. Okay. So last question, who was the first person to win in BRC 2 this year after Matt Edwards?
BRC 2?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, yeah. after Matt Edwards. Who's the first person?
So I'm guessing it was the Ulster.
No, circuit lineman.
Oh, was it circuit lineman?
Don't be giving him. It's got to be an Irish.
It is. Matt had a fight to get his car ready, and I think he had a puncture on it, so strapped in behind, so he didn't actually win the circuit lineman. That was won by someone else.
I'm going to guess it's Philip Morrow, but I'm not sure it was.
No, it wasn't.
That's a good guess, but it isn't. Is it Phil Morrow? Should I tell you?
No. Patrick O'Brien.
Correct. Well done, Tony.
There you go. There you go.
Well done.
Well, we're tied. So you're both absolute Benjamins. And let's move on to the next any of the business.
I feel embarrassed of my current BRC knowledge, I have to say.
read a review and you can like.
Right, your any other business is going to be much better than mine, right? I can tell you that for nothing. But my any other business, and I urge you people to go and look at this, and this is incredibly UK-centric and incredibly more to do with a certain period of time, but it involves a Metro 604. And if you go on rallycarsforsale.net, you will see there's a Metro 604 being put on there for sale today, which is being Wednesday the 16th of November. And if you look at the history of that car and why that car was produced, it's not a normal Metro 604. It was actually produced for a TV program called The Winning Streak, which was effectively all about Ryan Champion's life in his younger years. It's funny how this crossovers here, but it's about a Yorkshire-based family garage. Need to say more. And their quest to have a young rally driver that's involved with the business and that the son of progress through and drive a Metro 604 to go and stick it to them at national level.
There's only one slight flaw in your analogy. I've never driven a 604.
Okay, but the rest of it could have been Ryan Champion. It could have been the names could have just been changed. That's as far as I'm concerned.
And I was quite young when that was filmed, but I do remember it being filmed on local events, and quite a lot of the local drivers at the time, the Yuck Hodgson's, Pete Slights, Andy Elliott's, were all involved in the filming of that particular program.
Well, there was three cars made. There was pretty much a standard Metro with the body kit put on it. And there was one kind of that was a kind of proper Metro, but it looked a lot like the test car that Tony Pond, I seem to remember, driving. And then there was one that effectively came apart like a jigsaw so they could film inside and stuff like that, kind of action shots and things like that. And one of them, car number three, is actually for sale on rallycarsforsale.net. So go and check it out, and then have a little bit of a Google, go on YouTube, because it's as rally programs go, I'll be honest with you, it's not going to keep you captivated. But I have tried to get the DVD. In fact, I've ordered the DVD, the whole series, this morning.
Can you get it on DVD? Can you?
I've managed to track somebody down that it converted it from VHS to DVD, and I've sent them an email.
Because that 604 that you're talking about, the prototype car, ran in the Winning Streak livery, actually ran on rallies like that. To get some footage, driven by the late Colin Malkin.
Yeah, well, he was one of the test drivers, wasn't he, for the programme? Yeah. There you go. That was my any other business, which was slightly left field.
That wasn't anything like as lame as what I was expecting.
Oh, well, there you go.
I was actually quite impressed with that one.
Jack's not so sure, I can tell.
I've learned something. I'm very impressed, Tony. Your any other business has taught me something. I didn't know much about this programme, so thank you very much.
Go and search it out, mate. You'll love it. You'll love it. Ryan Champion, last but not least,
mine actually sort of rounds out our show quite well of what we've talked about. It's like we'd planned it, but clearly, you know, that would be too organised for this show, wouldn't it?
It would.
But my any other business this week dates back to the last time Rally Australia closed out the WRC. Firstly, do you remember what year it was, Jack?
That's a good question.
Tony? Was it 2009?
Something like that? 2008?
A little bit earlier than that. It was 2005.
Okay.
And quite a lot of interesting stories from the 2005 rally.
Yes, I'm looking out. I know about it. Sorry, carry on, Mike. Sorry, I didn't hear the other
thing. I think that was the sound of a penny dropping in Twickenham. That was
correct. And a pigeon as well. Sorry, go on.
So in 2005, it was still back in Perth, Rally Australia. It rounded out the championship, and there were some interesting results and some interesting non-results. The most famous non-result been the podium place.
Sebastian Loeb.
No, more famous than that. It should have been the last podium place for the one and only Colin McRae, with Nicky Grist alongside and the Skoda Fabia. Colin was heading to a famous podium in the Fabia third place position when the Skoda team changed a gearbox out of precaution, and I think maybe the clutch change, and went OTL doing it. And if you remember the image of all the other teams from WRC were all clapping the Skoda fans when they actually went OTL. It was such a sad sight, you know, particularly, I guess, with what's happened afterwards. That would have been a fabulous podium for Skoda, for Colin, and the whole team. But unfortunately, that wasn't to be. And strangely enough, that car is now for sale on Rally Cars for Sale, Tony, somewhere near your 6R4. So that car's just come up for sale this week. So if anybody who wants a bit of history out there, go and buy it, because that would be great. And the rally was won by who?
Ah, I think it was his only win as well.
It was.
And I am going to go for, and he was in a Citroën.
Yes.
And he's Belgian.
He is.
And he, Francois Duval.
Yes. There you go. Francois.
And ironically, how about this? Jack, you'll love this as well, of course. Francois Duval was out last weekend, I think, in a Hyundai R4.
He was, and he's been testing the car as well. So that was Francois Duval's only win, because it was a very, very rare mistake by Sebastian Loeb that led him to have an accident, open the door for Duval. It was also one of the best results of Mitsubishi in that period, with the 04-05 Mitsubishi that I know a little bit about. They took second with Harry Rovanperä, fifth with Gigi Galli, and Manfred Stoll took third in the in a private Zara.
There you go.
Didn't Solberg do something strange in that event as well? Didn't he hit an animal or something?
A bird coming. Is that the one where you're thinking, where a bird came in through the air vent?
Maybe. I'm not sure. I'll look that one up and report back on Netflix.
Could have been.
To add the old fantastic story, Ryan, we did do a double-page spread feature on that story of Colin McRae and his potentially last podium, which wasn't, in the rally special earlier this year. So if you click onto the interweb, you can pick up a copy of MN and read more about what Ryan's just talked about.
There you go. It's the gift that just keeps giving, this podcast, isn't it? Who said we don't know what we're talking about? Hey. Anyway, moving on. Right, boys. Obviously, we've done our bit at the top. You know what comes now. We normally do lots of different bits and pieces. Thank you so, so much for the feedback we had from having Martin Holmes last week. He was a gentleman and a scholar and an absolute joy to talk to. And we will welcome him back again in the not-too-distant future, all being well. But coming up next, we're going to have Robbie Durant, a former co-driver in the British Rally Championship for various drivers, did a lot of the one makes over here and then went away and did the American series, did loads of stuff with Harry Hunt, of course, now is away doing Dakar type stuff, but he sat alongside Harry when Harry was possibly one of the first private teams to get one of the Citroën DS3s, the R3 front wheel drive car, and they did an incredible amount of rallies in that car. He talks a little bit about that, and he talks all about coming back alongside Travis Pastrana for 2017, and he tells us how that's come about as well. Then we're going to have Brendan Reeves. We made reference to at the top there. He's just finished recce today, and I thought it would be good to get him on, and he's going to be telling us all about the stages and what he hopes to achieve on Rally Australia. And last but not least, we've got Mike Shaw, again, regular contributor to the show, who covers the American Rally Championship for us, who kind of tells us all about the murky waters of what's gone on and what the championship's going to look like now moving forward. But boys, same time, same place next week, Jack Bengen?
Absolutely.
Of course. What else would you say? And Ryan Champion?
Well, I'm only going to have to say absolutely.
There you go. Folks, sit back, relax, enjoy the rest of the podcast. Again, please spread the word. Tell your rally friends. Absolute_rally, of course, on Twitter, facebook.com/absoluterally. iTunes, by the way, thank you all so much. We've had some fantastic 5-star reviews on iTunes. if I had it up in front of me, I'd name check you now. I promise you I'll name check you next time. But some really, really nice comments about the programme there. And thank you all so much.
This is Absolute Rally. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks. Accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 441904-766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally and welcome back to an old guest of, well, he was on TR back in the day, and I've just gone through some records and realised that it's 5.5 years since Robbie Durant has been on a podcast with me. So welcome back. For 5.5 years, Robbie. Welcome back to our new name, which is Absolute Rally.
Goodness me, 5.5 years. Thanks very much. And yeah, good afternoon. It's good to chat to you again. And I don't know about an old guest, although I suppose it is. The time passes and we all get a bit older, don't we?
well, unfortunately, we do, mate. We do. And do you know what? It's funny because we've known each other for such a long time. And obviously, one of the drivers sat with Johnny Wigmore, I've known for years as well, when we did the one makes and stuff. But I had to have a little bit of a look at what you'd done. Gee, you've done some air miles and you've done some rallies in some countries, haven't you?
Yeah, fortunately, I have been around, as they say, quite a lot. Suddenly, I started to talk back to people who were saying, oh, you know, when were you last here or when were you last there? And it's been a number of years. And as you were saying, with Johnny Wigmore back at the very beginning in the sort of very early 2000s and all the single make stuff, it's where you really learn your trade. And certainly those times I remember very fondly. And the world of motorsport, as small as it is, people keep coming back that were there at the time.
Yeah, well, again, you know, it's funny, we were talking just before we started doing this about how, you know, your paths crossed and things like that. And obviously, I seen you doing all the bits and pieces you were doing, obviously, with Johnny and stuff. And then all of a sudden, your name popped up. And again, it was something I was kind of half involved with. You ended up out in the States with an Aussie guy called Andrew Pinker. How did that come about?
That's right, I did. Yeah, it was a sort of strange story, really, as often they are with these sort of things. I was co-driving with Johnny sort of towards the end of 05 with the Tour of Six and Super Cup there, and we won that championship at the end of that year. I was actually talking to Johnny about that just last year, because it was 10 years, last year it was 10 years ago, you know, and suddenly we look back and wonder how that all happened. But yeah, and then I was looking to expand, really, and go a bit abroad, and I'd always travelled with work within motorsport, so I thought, well, why can't I do a few rallies abroad, you know, and got put in touch with some people in the States, and then got put in touch with Andy, who needed somebody, and then next thing you know, we're on the plane to the first event, and him being an Aussie, the first event was a snow rally, and he'd never seen snow, and I'd never done a rally in the States, and it was all a bit new and a bit whatever, and I think from memory, we were leading the rally by quite a long way and then stuck it in a snowbank, and that was the end of that. But yeah, after that, it was good fun.
I was just about to say, because that time started to get really, really busy around that time for you, because again, you were one of those co-drivers that wasn't shy, I think it's fair to say. You sat with a few drivers during that period. You know, a friend of the show, a man who's been on with us a few times, Martin Rowe, for instance, he pops up, and then a guy whose name I'd forgotten, you went over and did something in the Czech Republic in the Skoda Fabius, mate of mine, Simon Hughes, who you probably remember. Simon, I think, was doing it around that time. And you ended up with Bobby Mitchell in the Skodas. And again, I'd forgot about all this stuff.
Oh, no, it's interesting you mention that, actually. I was flicking through some photos in various, you know, house moves and things that you do in during your life, and you find these photos and these results and these bits of paper, and of course us co-drivers seem to keep and end up with, and yeah, the stuff with Skoda over in the Czech Republic, again, one mate championships, and you really cut your teeth there, you know, you learn all the fine little arts and crafts of the job, and you learn how to get the most out of a car often that isn't the fastest in the world, and sometimes a driver who's on their way up, you know. So it's really interesting to get the most out of the package you've got, and especially with sitting with different drivers, a lot of that information crosses over, you know, whether it be pace notes or fitness or any of the things that go into an event and a result. They can really help different drivers, you know.
I'll be honest with you, I'd forgotten, again, this is because you and I both know Johnny and stuff. I'd forgot even that you'd had the season with Johnny in the Super 60 under Puma, of course, for winning the KAs. I know we're jumping backwards and forwards between dates here, but again, that's just coming to me because there's a picture, or there was a picture in the briefing room at London Rally School where we both worked in the past, of course, of you guys in that Puma. Now, I've got a soft spot for naturally aspirated front-wheel drive car. I think we all have. I think all of us of a certain era. What was that like to be involved with a Super 1600 car?
Oh, that was fantastic. It was both of our first real experience of as what you'd say is a proper car, having done the KA Championship the year before. And just touching on that again, I seem to remember that from that year, 2003, and I think at the start of the year, there were 27 young up-and-coming rally drivers or wannabe rally drivers, all in exactly the same car, all fighting out for the KA Championship with some back in from Ford, which was unbelievable, really, and so popular, such a big sport back then, and such a big championship. But jumping into the Puma, it was amazing. We had some backing, and fortunate to have use of the car for the year as sort of the prize, if you like. Went up the road in it the first time, I think, at Johnny's rally school, and was, all right, okay, this is a bit different. We're going to have to get our act together. And of course, you know, when you're younger up and coming, you don't really have the budget to go testing and do rallies in between and all the rest of it. So you sort of learn on the events, and you put the preparation in, but you can only really learn on the stage mileage against the clock. And I think we won the British Championship Privateer Award that year, which was fantastic, and I think finished every rally but one, which was really good, and taught us both a lot.
That's just, just kind of reaching out to what you were saying there with regards to, you know, the Puma and everything else and the prize drives and stuff. I was doing the polos back in the day. Now, the polo was the poor relation in many ways with regards to numbers. And of course, you've just mentioned that you guys went to the 206s as well after that. You know, you think about 27 KAs, there was normally around 12 polos. There was normally around 20, 25, 206s. And you think about that as an entry alone. You just think about the one make entries alone. You talk about entries on rallies these days. You know, I can remember rocking up, you know, I think the year I started doing the one makes first year was 2002. Were the numbers that were getting churned out. And, you know, we were at the back of the field. You know, all the one makes were at the back of the field, if you remember.
That's right. You never even saw the front and, the Johnny Milners and the Tapio Alcalans at the front. You know, you were two or three hours behind them on the road every time, and it was almost like you were in a different rally. But of course, with the single makes, all you're focused on is anybody else in a car that looks like yours, you've got to beat them.
absolutely. But yeah, you just see, you know, those numbers and I guess those prize drives that enticed everybody. And of course, Peugeot did something very similar as well, of course, with the Super 1600 drive, which I think Gary Jennings won it, didn't he? I think it was Gary Jennings who was the last one to win it, if memory serves.
I think that's right. Yeah, you know, early 2000 again. But no, it was really great. And I always speak to people around the world about different forms of motorsport. Of course, they come up and come down, and I'm sure it'll come back to that point. I'd like to think that we can, you know, get behind current, you know, young drivers from the UK and co-drivers as well. And I know the MSA and the FIA have had various schemes over the years, and it's it puts out some big names. There's some chaps that were racing, you know, back when we were learning, who've made it very, very long way. You know, look through the World Championship, and you know, Seb Marshall, of course, and Craig Breen, and all the people that have done, cut their teeth on the national scene, are out there now representing the country.
Absolutely. Now, we lost you for a little while, Robbie, didn't we? I think it's fair to say. You know, all these fantastic, you know, adventures and rallies, you know, from the States to Canada. Obviously, the stuff you did with Harry Hunt as well. You know, what a program you did with Harry Hunt. You know, I think were you guys probably the first ones to run privately a DS3 R3 car?
Certainly, it was very, at the very start of the DS3 R3. Yeah, Harry had a couple of cars which had a packed program in 2011, I think, 11 and 12, certainly. I know that he had a Fiesta, R2 Fiesta before that. I went to the R3 car, and it was very new. So we were running into a few little teething problems. And of course, being a French car, it was designed for sort of French tarmac rallies. And off we went, decided to enter PWRC with it and put it through its paces. And with mixed fortune, to be fair, again, massively learning the proper program for both myself and Harry, and we had a really good time. Actually, you did a lot of air miles, as you touched on.
I was just about to say, you can't start looking through the results and stuff, and you look at that kind of, you know, that 2011-2012 period, you know, it was a phenomenal amount of rallies, which, you know, funnily enough, this is where I was coming to, is that you kind of get to the end of 2012 and you kind of disappeared, didn't you?
That's correct, yeah. I mean, at the same time, sort of balancing work and rallies, although the rallies were pretty much work for a number of years. But, I got injured in Bulgaria, of all places, at the end of 2012. Was kind of forced to take some time, and then had always been involved with Red Bull and the F1 program, on and off over the years, and went back to, as they call it, roundy racing.
I know. You know what? I got bollocked because we had Andrew Coley on for our Wales Rally GB preview, and I always give him a little bit of stick. I know his heart's with rallying, but obviously now he is the main man and the voice of course, of Wales Rallycross, and that's how I introduced him from the dark side and from roundy roundy. So it gave me
there
a bit of a bollocking.
There you go. I get ribbed all the time, depending on which side of the fence I'm on. Currently, it's but for me, it's motorsport, and top level motorsport's been life for a long time. So I can't talk down either side, really. I love them both. But certainly the rallies stopped for me for 3 or 4 years, actually, at high level. I was still doing some clubman events under the radar, still doing some tuition, still doing some work with some various co-drivers and drivers for different events, often preparation for long distance rallies or whatever it might be. But kind of, as you say, under the radar and not at a super high level. Until sort of springtime this year and the phone rang again.
Now, that's where I wanted to come to. Before we come to that, do you, I know this sounds like a stupid question, and it is a stupid question because I'm asking it, right? Do you have, you've sat with a lot of drivers over in the States, did you have Travis's number saved in your phone?
In all honesty, no, I didn't, no. Although... Yeah, having done some work or rallies against him and some work with some of their team members on projects back in the UK, it wasn't too many steps of separation, if you know what I mean.
I'm with you. It's just you know, when you get that call, you know, the caller ID, whether it's a withheld number or whatever, you kind of look at your phone and go, who could this be? You know, what do these people want now? And then it's Travis Pastrana. We're gonna go rallying properly. And any chance you could fly over and sit alongside me? Is that pretty much how it went down?
Something along those lines. Yeah. It's interesting because we talk of the UK as kind of centre of the motorsport universe, which I sort of have always believed that, really. And so a lot of their parts and engineering and information, certainly for the USA cars, has originated from the UK, if not still there now. So some of the people that are UK-based, I already work with on other projects. So it was only a small step and conversation. I'd always sort of be in touch and have my ear to the ground as to what they were up to. And then suddenly there was a conversation over a cup of tea, as it would be the British way, saying, well, you know, what if we needed somebody, what would you think? And I thought, well, now you've asked me, I'm going to have to think about it, aren't I? And we went a bit further down the road of those conversations, and I was only going to be keen if he was serious. He's been in and out of the rally scene and numerous other extreme sports scenes, as you all know, for a number of years, and it was only really for me something we could do if we were going to do it properly. Jumping off straight from X Games or straight from Nitro Circus straight to a rally and then a recce is not really the way to get results, and it looks like for him the time is a bit more inside next year.
So, you know, we've got a feature coming up at the end of the programme where we've got a reporter who kind of does some bits and pieces for us, Mike Shore over in the States, who's involved with a couple of events over there as well. He's kind of been breaking down what's going on, because obviously there's been some changes out in the States. Was that also part of it, perhaps, for Travis to commit to it as well? Because obviously Subaru have massively now put a lot of incentives. You know, we talked about it before, about incentives for people to go rallying. We spoke about one makes and stuff. But there's now a lot of incentives from Subaru America for people to wheel out these cars and go and do this new championship, isn't there?
Yeah, I think there is. And to be fair, Subaru have been amazing over there, really. Although it doesn't get quite too much coverage over here, and we've got our own things to cover in a way, but they've really supported that championship in its various guises for as long as I can remember, and a lot longer than that. And whether it be prize money, whether it be incentives for privateers who run a Subaru or get a result in a Subaru, whatever it is, they've really got behind it. And even when the numbers of competitors dropped away after the recession in the late 2000s, they still stuck with it in one form or another. And it's really quite admirable, because they've now obviously committed to a full two-car program, as well as the rallycross stuff within the US. And they've been developing their cars for the last few years. So you could say, well, maybe the cars are too quick or they're too far away from the competitors, but actually you've got to give it to them. They've stuck with it. And you can only beat the people you're racing against, if you like.
Absolutely. Well, we've had David on numerous times, and Drewy is an old teammate of mine, and we've had him on quite a few times, old Craig. And Craig's quite funny now. Craig, I know Craig is David's spotter when David does rallycross. Is Travis going to be doing any rallycross, and are you going to be his spotter?
Good question, and I have no idea to either of the answers to those questions. I think he'd like to. He has let on to me that actually they're pretty good fun, and he'd like to do a bit, but of course his schedule is packed and locked down many months in advance of what he's actually doing, and the rally stuff for him is going to come first, so that's going to be the main focus. And if he decides to do some rallycross events and they put a car out for him, then why shouldn't I go and have a look?
Absolutely. What's the worst that could happen? Now, you've got a bit of time off. I think the first event is towards the end of March, isn't it, for you guys? First round of this new championship.
Well, it all sort of fast forwards a bit. Time off, yeah, something like that. We're going out to Canada next week to do the penultimate round of the Canadian Championship. Travis and I in our open class factory car from Subaru, just really to get more time, if you like, time spent making notes on roads that we don't know, on a rally we don't know. And although I've known Travis a number of years, we've only, done essentially 2 days or 3 days against the clock with each other in the car. So it's a tall order to go out and compete head-to-head with David. He's on an unbelievable level. And I was surprised and impressed when I went back and did my first event over the summer about the pace that he's on. You might say, well, why go so quick when you've got limited competition, or the competition can't stay with you for the whole rally, but to be honest, the cars are almost like world rally cars. Well, you can't really drive them slowly. They don't work. You have to be absolutely on the limit, and then they work really well. The pace notes flow, the cars do what they're supposed to do. They're very much far removed from a production car that you can drive a little bit slower when you're learning and get away with it. David's really, really going hard, and this rally in Canada for us is a bit of chance, and no pressure, and no media commitments really. It's just to kind of get out there, learn the new roads, make the notes, go and drive the rally, and see what happens.
So it's the Tall Pines now. I assume Antoine's going to be out on that one as well, so you've got a little bit of competition you can gauge yourself with anyway.
Absolutely. I mean, Travis is he's a great flag holder for the sport, wherever he is or for anything he's doing, but he's desperate to get Antoine and or a couple of other Canadians to compete on some more of the championship rounds and for us to cross over a little bit more, as indeed they have in the past. And I know that he's going to be championing hard to get more people to enter at the top level, because there's some very good drivers, and Antoine is one of them, and it'll be a tall order next week. Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, listen, we wish you the best of luck. We do appreciate your time, and as I've always said to Drewy and said to David Higgins as well, listen, when you're home and you've been doing stuff, the door's always open. We'd love to have you on.
Fantastic. Yeah, no, it sounds great. Great to keep you posted on what's going on. It's nice to chat and be reminded of a few of the good, and actually you haven't reminded me of the bad times yet, but there were one or two. So
I stayed away with the ones that were wrote in red. That's what I did when I was looking at the results. I stayed away from retired, accident, retired, accident. I stayed away from those ones. I kept it positive for you, mate.
You get every outcome, right?
I like that outlook. Robbie Durant, listen, I really do appreciate your time on Absolute Rally, and best of luck for next week, and also best of luck, of course, for the 2017. What an epic season you're going to have alongside Travis Pastrana.
Fantastic, thank you.
This is Absolute Rally. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks. Accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 44 1904 766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally and welcome back to my favourite Aussie driver. I've got to say that because he's on the line now and I know he listens to the show and he's a friend of the show and everything else. Brendan Reeves, hello.
Hey Tony, how you going, mate?
We're really good. We're really excited because we kind of got somebody. It feels a bit like the old days where we've kind of got you right in the middle of the event. What I mean is by that, you've done the recce. So you've just been out and done the recce for Rally Australia and now you're back and you're kind of, I assume you're tidying up your notes and things like that. Just tell us, tell our listeners what's gone on over the last 2 days.
Yeah, you're spot on. I drove up to the rally, so it is my home event. Canada Rally Australia, but it took 1,700 kilometres just to get here. So I actually got to Rally Spain quicker than my home event. Australia is such a big country. So by the time we got up here, we took the recce car in the truck, unload that. You know, it's like privateer team, get everything ready and hit off with the recce stages. Most of the recce was done yesterday. We didn't have too much left to do today, so it's predominantly Friday stages. We did first, but we didn't do the Newry stage. And we did Saturday stages, which was Nambucca, 50-kilometre stage, and also Valla. And then today we were left with the Sunday stages, plus two new super special stages that have never been used before. And I've got to tell you, they're actually pretty exciting. I was pumped getting around them today. You know, one's a rallycross track, a lot of fun and sort of mixed surfaces. So I felt a bit like Petter Solberg in the recce just driving around. And I think it's going to be cool for the spectators. You know, it's built in the side of a mountain and they use it a lot for drifting. So there's some good sections and long corners at Titan and some hairpins. But the big stage everyone's talking about is Nambucca, you know, 50 kilometres, repeated twice, and it's looking like 32-odd degrees for Saturday. So very dry and dusty and a big challenge for everyone.
Has there been, we've just gone, obviously 3 weeks ago you were, well, the WRC was on my doorstep and it was, even though it was a slightly warmer supposedly period here in the UK, it threw up all the typical Rally GB weather, you know, the cold and the fog and the rain and everything else. What kind of conditions are the crews going to, well, obviously yourself all included in this, what are you going to be welcome with? What are the stages looking like now it's later in the year?
Yeah, so being in November, you know, the last WRC of the year, it'll be similar to when it was in September, but just 5, 6, 7 degrees hotter, I think. You know, we've got some rain back in 2011 when I did this event, and, you know, a few of us ended up in a paddock and getting our way back onto the stages, but it's looking like a dry rally this year. There was originally some rain forecast for Friday, which wouldn't be an issue because they're good crush rock stages on Friday out on the, we call them the Shire Roads, council roads over between the houses and the farmland flowing through the hills. Then Saturday's pretty much the same with one forest stage. And then Sunday is pretty much complete forest, clay base with some rocks. And, you know, they look very dry and dusty, even from the recce where people are braking at slow speeds, the road's starting to break up. So talking to some of the Irish guys today on recce that have brought their escorts over to compete, you know, they're so excited because they don't get to see dry roads like this ever.
No, well, to be fair, Marty McCormack's a mate of mine and I helped him get his car over there, to be honest with you. So I was part of that little posse of getting those guys over there, to be honest.
I was talking to Marty today, so that's great.
He's proper up for it. And boy, he can pedal that escort as well, by the way. he can pedal that Escort. So it'll be interesting to see how he goes. But one interesting thing that you've just mentioned there with regard to the recce and stuff like that. Now, funnily enough, the last time I was reccing with Marty, he had to tow me through a stage to do the recce. But there's been a big thing with regards to M Sport using the Volvos for the last time and stuff like that, and the tough conditions that recce cars go through. Now, you've just been saying that the stages are looking a little bit drier and a little bit rougher. What do you use as a recce car?
So I actually use my girlfriend's car. It's a Subaru RS. So for this event, I made it a bit higher off the ground, put some Subaru Outback wheels on it and tyres, so it's probably 2 inches higher than normal. Plus being four-wheel drive is really, really handy, and some of the parts correspond and fit my 2006 STI rally car. So it's spare parts as well when we're in the service park, which is really handy. But the car did a brilliant job. You know, it probably needs a new set of shocks after this event, 320Ks of recce, but I've cleaned it up good and given it back to Cass now.
Does she know? I've cleaned your car for you, dear. There's your car back.
She's here at the event, so she knows well. I always bring it back, and like, we had a bit of a power steering issue today. It was leaking a little bit, and I rang her and I said, oh, I don't know if I'll get through recce. And she's just like, oh, what have you broken this time?
Oh, dear.
But we got it through, so that was good. But, you know, it's hard for these international guys coming over. We've had a lot of them contacting us the last couple of weeks trying to chase left-hand drive recce cars with Skoda coming here so late. They were after a left-hand drive recce car and some of the other guys, so they've ended up hiring some M Sport Volvos as well that they probably originally weren't doing, because it's just not left-hand drive cars in Australia. They're really hard to get.
Yeah, well, it's of course you guys are on the right, which is why it's always preferable if you find a Mark II Escort in Australia, ship it over to the UK, it'll be worth a fortune because of those dry conditions, and of course it will be a right-hand drive car. So one thing I think some of our listeners behave, you know, we have people, you know, who are rally fans, we have people who go out and watch, we have people who compete as well, but you know, you're just saying it's going to be quite a rough event. Obviously, you've got to put that recce car in, perhaps in positions and on part of the road that maybe you wouldn't really want to, but you need to find where the line is, isn't it?
You're spot on there. You know, like Friday's roads are beautiful. They're super smooth and just amazing. You know, I'd just do the stage one Yutungan 10 times over if I could. It's amazing. But a stage like Nuriambucca, there's quite a lot of jumps where the graders come through and made banks across the road to detour the water away so it doesn't run down the road and damage it. So you're constantly leaving the ground, and then there's some creek crossings and some really narrow wooden bridges, you know. So driving your recce car through, you take it quite easy because it's a big challenge. You know, your recce is the most important preparation you can do for the rally itself. So if you don't get those pace notes down to paper, you're pretty much stuffed for the rally and you're setting yourself back. So myself and most of the other competitors here, we all video the recce and then we'll review that. I've already watched the stages once over this afternoon, and then we'll watch it each night before we go and compete on the stages, because the more you know the roads, the better it is. You know, just like a circuit racer, the more they learn the circuit, the quicker they are, and it's the same with rally.
Absolutely. Now, Brendo, we've not seen you on international stage for a little while. We all know how tough it is to be out there and be doing stuff. And what I love is, just to add to this interview, Brendo, we've got someone with a buzz gun behind you, just to add a little bit of atmosphere to this piece, which is brilliant. But we've not seen you on the international stage for a while. You are entered in the WRC section, albeit in the Group N car. Just tell us the effort that it took to get there.
A lot of effort. So one thing that Rhiannon, Jasmina, my co-driver and sister, and I have always done that's worked really well for us in international events is got supporters on board on our bonnet. So this event, we were really struggling to get the final pieces together. So we advertised on our Facebook. It was $100 a name, and we've got 40 names on our bonnet. So it's been a massive help, and we've got a brand new livery on the car, so it's flat black for the first third of the car, and probably the last two thirds is really bright yellow. So the car stands out like anything. It's got our logo, Reeves Earth, moving on the side. That's our family business. I drive trucks and loaders as a normal job.
And then our supporters been all year, Bendigo Tyre Centre, Motul, Exceedy Clutches, Project MU Pads, you know. I find it very hard in rallying to get cash money. So the bonnet names have been excellent and every little bit adds up and counts for that $4,000. Plus some people chipped in even more than that. Some people gave $500.
Wow.
So that's been incredible. Plus things like the brake pads from Project MU Racing, you know, $800 a set. So if you can get them for free, it's just like getting money because you've got to purchase them anyway.
Absolutely. It's the little things that, you know, from when I've done GB, it's like when you've got to go to SIT, which is the tracking company, and put your 2,000 euros down on a credit card just to secure your tracking unit and stuff. Things that you don't think about. And obviously you do get that money back once the unit's gone back and stuff like that. But just for your cash flow throughout the event, it is just those little things, isn't it, that really, really do add up.
All the little things add up. That's right. And even feeding the boys for the week, your fuel money getting here. So you need to be well prepared. And this is the last rally for the year for me and most of the crews over here. So you want to make a big effort for the last rally before Christmas. So we've certainly done that, you know, done a few upgrades on the car as well. It's a 2006 Group N Subaru, but in Australia, our rules were allowed to modify the car a bit more. So we've got the PPG dog box, but with a sequential shifter. And we've got a 34 mil restrictor on 102 octane fuel. Plus for our forge rods and pistons in the engine, a little bit of head work. So the car's probably a second a K faster than you're used to seeing the Group N cars, and a bit lighter as well. So it's a bit more exciting to drive.
Fantastic. Well, listen, Brendo, we're all behind you. You know, everyone from Absolute Rally, you know, we know you listen to the show. We know we drag you on from time to time, but we just thought it was a unique opportunity to talk to you kind of right at the end of the recce. And we really do appreciate your time, because as I say, it's brilliant the fact that we can hear buzz guns in the background, mate. I love that. I really do. So listen.
The boys are getting eaten by mozzies.
Oh, they are. Well, and are you hiding away as well?
I'm just sitting at the front of the car at the moment. it's what, 8:30 at night, so we've got all the LED lights set up under the tent, and you know all the insects and the mosquitoes are attracted to them.
Love it. Love it. Well, listen, you go and rub some cream on your boys, which sounds really dodgy, but I think they probably deserve it. But listen, mate, have a safe rally. Go and enjoy yourself. Go and do what you know you can do, and we'll be keeping an eye on you, okay?
Thanks, mate. I can't wait.
Really appreciate it. Brendan Rees, again, absolute legend on Absolute Rally, and we're now going to cross over to our friend over in the States. He's going to explain what's going on over there with those championships.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks. Accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 44 1904 766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is Absolute Rally.
And welcome back to the final section of Absolute Rally. We do try to cover everything, and you know, we like to think we bring something different. We try to explain things and we try to get different people involved, and this week we've got Mike Shaw back, who's been with us a couple of times. Mike, based over the other side of the Atlantic, massive rally fan, but also very much with his finger on the pulse of what's going on within the world of rally and over in America. So Mike, welcome back to Absolute Rally.
It's good to be back, Tom.
Now, explain to us, and us laymen over here, we've been watching from afar, and people from all around the world have been watching what's going on with regards to, you know, we knew it as Rally America. I can remember it as, you know, the SCCA. It's been Rally America for the last few years. Of course, David Higgins has been very successful in it. But there's some changes with regards to the championship, and some changes, of course, to what Subaru America are doing as well.
Yeah, that's the big announcement that came out just a little over a week ago. You know, we had this new American Rally Association that came into being, and we weren't sure if it had any teeth behind it, because there was only three confirmed rounds when it first came online, when I last talked to you guys. Other rounds like Oregon Trail, and I think it was Ojibwe, I think it was, and some of the others had not chimed in as to what their commitment was going to be for 2017. Rally America's season was still going. They didn't confirm many rounds for 2017 yet either. So we're like, okay, there's this coup kind of going on, but it wasn't yet complete. And now we have confirmation of what Subaru's plan is, which direction they think is better for the sport, as well as American Rally Association really establishing itself as being now what I would say is the premier championship here in the States. So as it sits right now, there are five USA rounds and a sixth round added to this American Rally Association for 2017 for a true championship. They're going a little bit of a unique route by starting off by sharing with the Canadians, the Canadian Rally Championship, and they're going to be at Rally Personnage up in Quebec for a traditional start using a snow rally. So that's a little bit different.
Which is epic as well, because of course that brings the whole... The whole other man that is dominated since he took over the Subaru Canada seat, Anton Lesage, of course, who's now going to be able to go toe to toe with these guys.
Yes, that'll be really good news. Obviously, a car that isn't quite as developed to the level as the guys at Vermont Sports Car, but we know that he has all the talent and ability. As we know with a lot of races where you get traction is reduced, that kind of ends up being a little bit of an equalizer in performance, right?
Absolutely.
So it should be good.
Absolutely.
It should be really good.
So I guess what has Rally America, as we know it, is that now disbanding? Is that still running as a championship? Or how is this panning out?
Rally America has not made any official statements yet, but there are some of the rounds that have said that they will stick with Rally America. So, and I can do just kind of really briefly, but we have the six rounds that are going to be with Rally America, or with American Rally Association, are going to be the Personnage, Oregon Trail Rally will be the first American round. Then we go to Olympus. Then we head over to Pennsylvania for STPR, then New England Forest Rally, and it's going to finish up at Ojibwe. So there's our six rounds. So far, Rally America has confirmed rounds of Snowdrift. So they're still going to have this traditional Snowdrift. They're going to have Rally the 100 Acre Wood in Missouri. And then we've heard that LSPR is going to stick with them. And there's a brand new round, actually, in Colorado, a revival. It used to be on the ticket with Rally America back in 2009. But it's been away for a while, and there's new organizers, and they have an exciting thing coming on where they're going to do a street stage in downtown Denver.
Wow.
To start off the event, which Denver, Colorado is a very large city. So that's really exciting for them, but four rounds a championship does not make.
I guess, and this is the other thing, obviously, we spoke to various guests over the years, and we spoke to yourself about it as well, is that, you know, rallying is a huge part of all our lives, but with regards to what's going on over in the States and how vast the States is, it's such a drop in the ocean. So to have two championships like this, you know, vying for customers, and that's basically what, you know, rally drivers are. That's what we are when we enter rallies. Obviously, Subaru have stuck their flag in what they want to be doing. Surely that leaves what's left of Rally America as you know, it's in danger, surely, of not getting the entries for these events to run.
And that brings up a very good point. And the part I didn't mention is that Subaru has not only come on and said they're going to race with the American Rally Association for the 2017 season, but they are going to be a sponsor of the series itself. They were not a sponsor of Rally America last year. They dropped that sponsorship of the series. And so there's obviously been a little bit of a rift there with them that have been kind of oncoming for a little bit. I don't know all the details of it, but they're happy to go in this new direction. But one thing that Subaru also does is they have these massive contingency plans programs that offer real money, you know, for people that win. They offer discounts and entry fees, which is a way to get people with Subarus to enter and get these cars on the grid. None of this is offered for anybody driving a Subaru and going to a Rally America event. It's only for American Rally Association. So, yeah, this further kind of pushes the Rally America to kind of a regional championship of sorts?
Well, you know, we over here, and I can speak from over here, we used to have three major championships. We had the British Rally Championship, we had the BTRDA National Series, and we had something in the middle called ANCRO, which later became the Mintec Series and various things. We couldn't sustain those three championships in this country, and thus one of them just faded away. You know, the ANCRO Mintec Series just faded away. And you know, still to this day, you look at, you know, the British Rally Championship is quite shallow once you start stripping it back, really. The BTRDA National Series are very, very strong. But, you know, for us guys, we struggle to get, you know, 100 car entries, 120 car entries on British, you know, international events, if you like. I just fear for you guys. Do you know from the organizers where the breakpoint is, how many cars they need to have entered on their events?
I do not know. I know that when we did it as a national event with Rally America here at Oregon Trail, I believe we were somewhere around the 50 entries mark would at least get us a break even. I don't know what that would mean for these Rally America having to retool itself, run a little leaner probably. That number might be able to drop. But it's going to be an interesting 2017 season for them. The excitement of Colorado, a lot of people want to go there. But here's the other big deal with that one. It's a conflict with the same exact date as New England Forest Rally, which is going to be technically the home event of American Rally Association, because their home base is right up there in the Vermont area, right up in the, you know, New England. So it's going to be an interesting 2017 season. I think Rally America will be able to survive on regionals for a while. Regionals are the largest number of entries at any of our events. So, but to what? It seems like these events, I could see them easily just saying, you know what, this isn't worth it. Let's move on over to American Rally Association, potentially. It'll be interesting. I don't know really where it's going to go from there.
I guess that, you know, I suppose everyone was kind of waiting. I think the last time we spoke, everyone was kind of waiting to see what Subaru America were going to do. And obviously they've stuck their flag well and truly and where they want to be, and obviously offering the arrival, you know, the start money for people driving Subarus and things like that, and obviously backing the program as well. Now, they've been very proactive over the last 24 months with this launch control video that they put out. I think some of that was due to their frustration with regards to the TV packages and things like that. Has there anything been said about TV and coverage and things like that from either party?
There hasn't been anything said specifically. I'm trying to get some information from the kind of the marketing committee they have with this American Rally Association and what their plans are. When there's stuff that'll be publicly available, I'll definitely let everyone know. But some of the rumors I've heard is that maybe an expansion of the launch control to be an all-inclusive and cover the entire championship. The extra dollars required to do that is minimal, since they're already there and filming for the Subaru guys, right? So I think that's what we probably see first. As far as expansion to regular TV, I wouldn't expect that probably for 2017.
Now, you did have, not so long ago, you also had that Mitsubishi Mirage over there with Brian Bouffier driving it. Is there any more word on perhaps, you know, the guys who brought that car over and took Brian Bouffier over to the States? Is there any more word on perhaps a bit more of an international flavor of drivers coming over to do the new championship?
Nothing as of yet. I think there's a lot of people that have been just kind of wait and see with how this all panned out. You know, the confirmation of the different rounds and the Subaru commitment has all just really come about in the last like 3 weeks. So, I think we'll have to just kind of wait and see what other teams out there want to do. The Mitsubishi project, that's still been kind of ongoing. I'd love to see Bouffier back. And by the way, I got to ride with him, and that was phenomenal, by the way. I haven't heard any commitment from any others. There is another project from that same group, though, of a Polo, believe it or not, that's built similar to that Mitsubishi, a Polish American named Peter Fatella, who's been in our championship for a number of years. That project's been half complete. I haven't seen an actual running car yet, but there's been a lot of garage picks of them working on it. I'd love to see that in the 2017 championship.
Wow. Well, I think what we need to do probably around January, Mike, is get you back. What is the date of the opening round?
The date of the opening round is, and I'm sorry, I do not have it right in front of me.
That's okay. Is it January, February 3rd?
There it is. February 3rd and through the 4th in Maniwaki, Quebec.
Wow.
Personage.
Wow. Listen, we need to get you back before then, because hopefully by then we'll also get a better idea of who's going to be there. But Mike, you've cleared up a lot of questions of a lot of rally fans, certainly a lot of the questions that I had. You've been really, really good. Mike does support us and get sending a lot of information regards to what's going on the other side of the pond. But I thought, it's always better to get Mike on. He's got his finger on the pulse. You don't need me gibbering on about it, do you? So Mike, thank you so much as ever for joining us on Absolute Rally.
You're very welcome. I did want to say one just last thing is, even with all the controversy and whatnot, the 2016 championship was actually really good with Rally America. Yes, David Higgins took home the championship from the overall, but our two-wheel drive came down to the very last event, and it was between Ryan Millen and Cameron Steely. Ryan Millen of the famed New Zealand Millen family, and he unfortunately went off in the dark, lost it, but it was a great, great championship, fun to watch. So,
fantastic. Well, hopefully we'll get to see more of this with the investments and everything for next year. Obviously, we've been robbed of some of this type of footage, so hopefully we'll get to see some of these epic battles next year.
Indeed. Thanks for having me on, Tom.
Hey, no problem. Mike has joined us. By all means, folks, if you've got information, you're involved in championships like Mike and stuff, please get in touch. You know how to go find us now. It's @absolute_rally on Twitter or facebook.com/absolute rally. We do appreciate the download. I hope you've enjoyed this one. Spread the word, spread the love. If you've got rally friends, let them know about Absolute Rally. Thanks again, folks.